and welcome to the Trash Tapes Podcast as part of the Enigmatic Productions Network. If you love bad cinema and incredible deep dives into cult film, then you have come to the right place. So if you like what you hear and want to support us, you can do so by donating some funds to our Buy Me a Coffee website, along with the Acast supporter feature. All of these can be found in the description below. And now, on with the show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Oh, let me get adjusted. God damn this pillow.
DJ Ed is on the mic and the mixer.
Yay! I'm so glad you're officially embracing your DJ Edness. It's at least you're not doing like kids' parties or weddings. Are you available for bar mitzvahs?
I'm available for anything, mate.
I'm available for anything because my God, I need this job so badly. I'll do a funeral.
No, I always used to think like mixers looked intimidating when I first saw them. But now, when you understand what all the dials are, it's a piece of piss.
A piece of piss.
You are about to experience trash cinema.
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Trash Tapes, where one man's trash is another man's treasure. I am your host, Johann Schiphol, the inflictor of pain, and I am here with my victim and DJ and soundboard mixer and everything else, Edward Harvey.
Hello, mate.
Howdy.
I've gone Australian. What's going on?
What? Ever since you embraced this DJ Ed character, you've now become an Aussie, aren't you?
Well, it started off as like the Harry Enfield kind of in Paul Whitehouse DJ.
Yeah.
But you sort of now and again morphs into Australian, isn't it? That one.
Eventually he's going to wear a cork hat and call everyone crikey. Oh, but that's brilliant. How are you doing anyway?
Yeah, I'm very well. I'm very excited for the film we're going to talk about.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. Because technically, we've been doing this Trash Tapes experiment in air quotes, for about 2 years now.
Yeah.
This is when we first started 2 years ago with Troll 2. And I've always said from the get-go that we've kind of started off really too well because there's been movies that never matched Troll 2 ever since.
No, I think we needed a good one to kick off, but then we kind of peaked too early, didn't we? It's like we started off and it was amazing. The first episode, I still listen to it now and find it really funny.
It's hilarious.
But then it's difficult to keep up with that kind of momentum, you know?
Because then it took at least about 4 or 5 more episodes to find another movie that was just as good. So since it's now been like 2 years, which I'm still surprised by, we had to do another big one. I think this is what we have to do every year. We have to do a biggie, a very well-known one, a famous one, one that trumps all of it. We're doing Samurai Cop.
So they call him Samurai, huh?
His real name is Joe Marshall. They call him Samurai. He speaks fluent Japanese.
Omaha, Yamaha, whatever his name is, right?
Are you Fujiyama?
He got his martial arts training from the masters in Japan. He was brought over here from the police force in San Diego to fight us.
I want him dead!
Damn.
God damn you guys. All you've done is cost me bloodshed and mayhem.
Well, this one's dead too. Not captured alive.
Have you been circumcised? Well, your doctor must have cut a big portion of it off.
No, he was a good doctor. Now, I'm telling these son of a bitches that if they continue killing our children, I'll have their stinking bodies in garbage bags and ship them back to Japan for fertilizer. Got it?
Yeah. Samurai Cop. It is... Oh, boy, Samurai Cop is a completely different kettle of fish. It is a very unique piece of trash.
I've got a soundbite that summarizes it.
Do it.
So they call you Samurai. Let's see how good you are with a sword. Samurai Super Cop.
Yeah, pretty much. This is it's like the Room version of action movies.
It's difficult to summarize it because there's lots of like sort of stuff going on, and it's like there's two. When I was watching it, making notes and making like sort of time code notes for the sound clips,
yeah,
there's just too many. It's just like there's too many funny things happen. Too many mistakes and all sorts of stuff.
For the very first time ever doing a Trash Tapes, I had to actually stop the movie, rewind it, and make notes. Because there's so much I wanted to talk about. To the point that I've got my phone out, right? And I've got the notes page. There's 3 pages worth of notes.
Just writing an essay on Samurai Cop.
I could totally write a thesis on Samurai Cop. And it's because Samurai Cop is such a unique kind of devil, I like to call it. Yeah, let's just break it down, first of all, very simply, that and people are wondering what the hell am I talking about in terms of Samurai Cop. Samurai Cop is a 1991 American direct-to-video action film directed, produced, and written by Amir Sevan, right? Amir Sevan was an Iranian. Right, yeah. He was an Iranian who came to America, wanted to make American action movies, right? Which is always a kind of thing with a lot of famous bad films. They always seem to be foreigners trying to make American movies and just failing miserably because they're not American.
Mm. And they think they know what American... It is to be American and what Americans like in films, but they don't really have an idea.
They have no clue. They are so off the ball. But this is the thing. Samurai Cop wasn't his first sort of movie. He's been doing it for a while now. The last movie he ever made actually was Samurai Cop.
Oh, right.
Which is a shame, really. I'm not sure whether he thought he peaked or whether the bubble finally burst. But do you want me to give you the names of all the other ones? Some of these are corkers.
Okay.
Okay, so Hollywood Cop was the one from 1987. Okay. He then did a movie called Young Rebels. He then made a one just called Gypsy. And then this is my favourite one, okay? And this demonstrates how much this Iranian director has just wanted to make an American movie, right? Killing American Style.
That's amazing.
What a title.
Apologize, or I'll blow your head off.
A lot more people are going to get killed.
Freeze, Lynch. Police, you're under arrest.
And you can't do a goddamn thing about it.
Drop your gun! Put your hands over your head! What do you want from me?
I want a doctor. I want one now. And you're gonna get me one.
American Style!
It's like, not only am I gonna kill you, I'm gonna kill you like an American does.
With a shotgun.
With a whole bunch of shit, actually. So basically, with this director, he studied theatre in California. And then when he returned home to his home country, he made a whole bunch of movies. And they were more considered to be more dramas, more stuff like that. But because in Iran, in that kind of time period, in the 60s and 70s, he couldn't really get away with the budget or the feeling to do an action movie. So he moved back to America and decided to make action movies. All of them cheap, all of them absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
But Samurai Cop being the ultimate mixture of what this man was really trying to pull off. And also the sheer amount of gull he had. But he was, I'd be honest, he actually got quite some, he got quite a few people in this movie. And some of them have some notoriety.
Mm.
So let's talk about the big guy first. Literally the big guy. He's the biggest guy in the whole on set. He's huge.
Mm.
Especially that chin. got Robert Zadar.
Yeah, I love Robert Zadar. And he's good. He's a good bad guy in this.
He's great.
Yeah.
He's actually taking it so seriously, in spite the fact that what he's given is garbage.
Yeah, and you can tell he's probably the best actor, isn't he? Do you think?
By 1,000%.
Yeah.
Because he's acted before.
Mm.
Now, I know Robert Zadar originally from Maniac Cop, because he is the Maniac Cop.
Mm.
Have you ever seen the original poster for Samurai Cop?
I have, yeah, and it looks like Maniac Cop.
Exactly.
And obviously they're going on the fact they've got Robert Zadar involved, and people, oh, Maniac Cop, is this like that? And they're going to watch it because of that, just to get the bums on seats kind of thing.
Yes! And it's so bizarre, because, just describe what it is, so people, obviously people listening, you've got a guy who's clearly in a full cop's outfit, you know, hidden down, like you've got shadows over his eyes.
It's like horror. It's silhouetted, isn't it? In silhouette.
Yes.
With a katana.
With a katana, which is...
What does katana mean?
It means Japanese sword.
yeah, actually. That's a great bit. A katana doesn't mean Japanese sword. It's just so dumb, but yeah. So the original poster had the sword and had him holding a decapitated head, but the main guy that we follow, whose name is Joe Marshall, aka the Samurai Cop, is played by Matt Hannon, or his normal name as Matthew Caridus, right? And he's never in the police outfit. He rarely holds a samurai sword. Apparently he speaks fluent Japanese. We never see it.
No, but there's like the whole, like, it means Japanese sword thing. That's put in there to know that he knows Japanese, apparently.
Knows Japanese.
It's just an exposition dump, isn't it? A little tiny
It's not
one.
Even
an
exposition dump. It's just like anyone could say it like that. It doesn't even sound like he knows what it is. Oh, it's a Japanese sword. Whatever. Oh.
But he says it he's so sincere the way he says it. It's like, no, it's exactly what it means.
Yeah, it's exactly what it means.
And they all like believe him. They're like, oh, like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You are the authority. You are nicknamed the samurai. So.
I mean, that whole thing is like, do you get the feeling in bad movies? This is a great example of bad movies, because all the other characters just revolve around the main character and react to the main character. It's almost like if that main character vanished and like went out of the room, they would just sit there not knowing what to do because that character's not there to react to, or like...
That's kind of true. It's almost as if like all the other side characters don't have any autonomy of their own.
No.
Like they have to either rely on the lead actor to do something, or the lead actor to do something stupid to do something.
A bit like in an old video game when like NPCs just kind of like wait there for you to talk to them, or like they just kind of maybe do one simple repetitive task looping until you interact with them.
Over and over again. Matthew Caderis, do you know what his job was before doing this?
No.
He was Sylvester Stallone's bodyguard.
Right.
Which explains his chiseled abs and this director's obsession with showing it off.
Yeah, well, he just likes showing any flesh off, doesn't he? Like,
okay, just before we get into it, do you notice that there was a lot of men in underwear in this entire movie?
Yeah, yeah. Well, men and women.
Everyone's in underwear.
Anyone that had I was going to say anyone had a physique, but that's not necessarily true.
Nah, there's a character in
because
there.
Because even the guy I've see in seen in lots of movies, like lot in extra in lots of movies.
Yeah,
he's in Big Trouble in Little China, one of my favorite movies.
The
guy that butts Okamura with the long beard.
Okamura.
And you see him in his underwear, like in just one moment, don't you?
It's so weird. That's the thing I think about.
Like, he's kissing that girl. It's like you're gonna satisfy me. Or something, say something like that.
So awkward. But this makes it more interesting because at the end of it, you have Matt Hannon. You have Robert Tazar, you have Gerald Okamura. So you've got some kind, even if it's just in B-moviedom.
Yeah, familiar faces.
Familiar faces, yeah. Right. And Melissa Moore as Peggy, who eventually has starred in quite a lot of B-movies as well, and she was known for, like, Sorority Girls and stuff like that. So it's a good cast of B-movie actors in something that looks... Oh my god! Just to very briefly, I'll go through the plot. Okay, so
do you want some music?
Yeah, shall we put on the theme song for Samurai Cop?
It doesn't sound like a theme song.
It sounds like something you'd get like a. It sounds like video game music. It sounds like something like just to fill in the gap in between. This is so.
Broke. Great.
So much action! Action! Right, so, Joe Marshall and Frank Washington, who personally is one of my favourite characters in the whole thing, right, are two tenacious police detectives who seek at all costs to stop the Katana Gang, a renegade Yakuza gang composed of violent and sadistic killers who want to lead the drug trade in Los Angeles. Right, it also mentions that Joe Marshall is apparently he came from San Francisco because he had experience with the Yakuza gang.
Yeah.
And just he seemed to take him down, so he's gonna try and attempt it here. But obviously, he's getting in the way. He's doing things wrongly. People are dying, man. And so everything, including the police chief, is on his back. They are not ready to take down the samurai cop.
Brilliant.
Fantastic. Yeah, so that's the plot. So realistically, thinking about it, the plot isn't important.
No.
Because even if we go into too much detail with the plot, there isn't much. It's just a whole bunch of segments filling in that two cops are trying to take down the Yakuza.
It feels like the director has thought about sequences first. Like, I want some sex scenes, I want some action scenes.
Yeah.
And how do I string all those together? Rather than thinking of the narrative first, the thought of the action... And it's sort of set pieces and things like that. It's just like, how do I string these together?
Definitely. It does feel like it's been literally almost sewn on.
Mm.
Because there are so many random scenes in this. Scenes that never come back. I'm looking at you because I know you. You're going to have a couple of soundboard clips for the following.
Oh, I've got plenty.
Do you have the gay waiter?
Yes.
Who's that blonde girl?
Oh, her name is Jennifer.
She's the boss. The boss? You mean she owns this place?
Her mother owns the place.
What she's a is cartoon.
What is this voice?
Killed? Who shot him?
He.
He.
Who?
Him.
Who's him?
Himself.
Hips.
Oh, he committed suicide.
Yes.
No one's this perky for suicide.
When you see Jennifer alone, tell her I think she's very lovely.
He's such a slut, isn't he?
He's such a mad hoe.
I'll try to see her soon.
Good. I'll help you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I like cops.
What's your name?
My cousin's a cop.
So oh, really? Where?
Where?
In Costa Rica.
Oh. Good. What's your name?
Completely useless sequence.
Alfonso Rafael Federico Sebastian. This is my first name.
What's your last name?
Oh,
that's all right. We just
that's
need
enough.
Your first
no,
name.
No, we don't
Thanks
need to know his name.
Bye-bye. I'll tell my cousin I know you.
Joe's coming.
Why didn't you let me hear his last name? Oh, come on, man. His last name would have made a book.
So here's the thing, right? Yeah, you heard the entire sequence. This waiter shows up in one of the sequences. Says a bizarre backstory that makes no sense, and then just leaves for a joke that doesn't make any sense either.
Yeah, I think this is just the director has got a really like poor sense of humor, like almost like a child.
Yeah,
and he wanted some scenes in just for humour and his own personal, like, humour, and just thinking, oh, this will be funny, so I'll put this in. Mm. There's lots of bits that are, like, just bad jokes that really painfully, like, almost like cracker jokes. They're just put in there, and they're, like, they don't need to be there.
It's not even that. It's not even that they're bad cracker jokes. They're also jokes that are very immature, but they're so immature you burst out in laughter. I assume you've got something here.
I have this.
Why did you come under?
I'm an undercover cop. Da-da-da-da-da-da.
It's like Frank, like the black partner.
Frank Washington. Frank Washington.
He's got loads of like crap, like jokey kind of comments, doesn't he?
But can I just say, he's my favourite character.
He is, he's brilliant. He's the best guy.
Because he comes up with all the best lines. I mean, he comes up with all the best jokes, all the best lines, all the best gags, all the recurring jokes come from this guy. Mwah, gold.
He's just got so many things that make me burst out laughing. This is another one.
Who the hell are you? What do you want?
I want information.
What kind of information? What information about my butt?
Sit down.
Information about my butt?
It's round, it's perky, it's perfect.
That really made me laugh the first time I heard that. Like,
oh. This movie has a lot of reshoots, and I can sort of explain... I can sort of explain the reshoots, but first of all, I want you just to play one of my favourite scenes, another useless scene as well. It's the hitting on the doctor scene.
Oh, it's cringe. Really cringe.
Play it.
Do you like what you see?
I love what I see.
Yeah.
Would you like to touch what you see?
Is that a serious question?
This comes out of nowhere, by the way.
Would you like to go out with me?
Yeah.
Yes, I would.
Would you like to fuck me?
Bingo.
Yay! Now...
It continues. I've got four clips from this section.
It's ridiculous how long it goes.
Yeah.
It's another useless scene with the doctor. Now... The movie was originally shot in a couple of weeks. It's over a couple of weeks and then extended over several months. Okay, so that's the first batch. Starting in June 1990, there is a very famous example of how you can tell the reshoots were. Mm. There's actually many reasons. One, they use different stock.
Yeah, I've heard about this, and you can see it almost in this day and age. It would be seen as like bad white balancing, like where the colouring is completely off, like, and you can't do anything about it because it's the base of the colouring, like the white is balanced wrong.
Yeah,
but with real film is if you've used daylight or nighttime stock or something like that, and you've got it wrong.
So you have three different kinds of stock. Mm. You have daylight, outdoor daylight, nighttime outdoor shot, and you have interior. Mm. So you have three different stock, so therefore it allows how much light comes into stock. I don't think he understood what that was.
No, just
he
just film. Okay.
So randomly within the same scene, it's suddenly very blue or suddenly very pink. You're just thinking, wow.
Yeah.
You're jumping back and forth. And it's really, it's the only thing in the movie for me that's really jarring. Like, it does totally take me out of the movie.
Oh, yeah, because it's like literally orange and then it goes back to being like white again, like the walls. You can see it in the walls. The walls, like I was saying, again, it's like white balancing of the digital. You'd have like a white wall and then all of a sudden it'd be an orange wall. Like
so funny. But it demonstrates all the reshoots.
Okay? Yeah.
Now... This leads to a second bit that makes it very obvious as a reshoot, and it's one of my favourite things. There's a wig.
Yes, the wig is amazing. And I think this is a one wig or two wigs, because some of them look slightly different, but they're all very, very feminine.
So here we go. I've got a fact about this. So, okay. So 7 months after the shoot was done, he believed filming was finished. So he cut his long hair he originally had short.
Mm.
Like, he wasn't expected to come back on the shoot, so he was done, right? However, while he was looking for more acting work, the director called him back into his office to do some reshoots. Okay? Now, the director was furious that he had the audacity to cut his hair. All right. So they immediately try to look around for a wig. Right. Now, what Matt generally thought originally, that the wig was going to be for wide shots. They wouldn't do close-ups with it.
Yeah.
So he stupidly agreed to put on this woman's wig.
Might get away with it, yeah.
You might be sneaky. No, he uses it for literally about 40% of the movie needed reshooting.
Very close-ups. I notice in some scenes they try and hide it by putting a cap on it, but you can still see it's like bursting out of the cap.
It's even funnier with the cap on, because it bulges out.
Yeah.
Okay.
But what's great is sometimes he's obviously thought, oh, I need some extra shots within this sequence. So it'll be an action sequence, and you'll suddenly cut to a close-up and he's in the wig in the close-up.
I know! It's so good!
It's amazing.
Oh, the wig is probably... The wig is its own character. Like, yeah. It's its own character. Okay. Another thing as well, third reason why you can tell there were reshoots, is because of the locations. Now, there's some... They got some really nice locations for some of the bits.
Mm.
Right? Although I'm very confused by some places. Like, is one of the gang members' houses? It has like a Defender arcade cabinet in the corner for no flipping reason. Or there's an office that has a paper mache lion's head?
Oh, don't get me started on the lion. The lion is the real scene stealer. It's like the way the shot is framed, it's like he's in the conversation as well.
This is the scene in an office, which we'll talk to about in a moment when we mention the other characters. But it's so weird. Who would have this?
No, it's so distracting. This is the worst production design ever. I think the thing is, I don't think there's any production design. I think it's like they went into a house and everything was there. They just kept it as it was.
Yeah, but this is the thing. There are loads of reaction shots throughout this film.
Yes.
And loads of close-up, mid-close-up shots of people looking directly down the camera. It looks really off, right?
Best ones are from Frank.
Yeah, which is what I'm talking about. During that sexy nurse sequence... That's certainly doctor sequence. He's pulling off some amazing facial expressions of just going, ooh. It's so bizarre and makes no sense why he's cut there. The reason why that was the case is because the director just shot about 20 minutes of him reacting to stuff.
Yeah.
So he can just cut to it whenever he needed to.
With a white wall background kind of thing.
Yes, with no context to what he's reacting. So his sort of reaction's going whatever, moving his head, rolling his eyes and all that kind of stuff. And just go, his puckered lips are my favourite one.
It's ooh-wee, kind of
ooh-wee, right? No context. So he wouldn't fed lines and say react to it. He just said no, you're going to react for 20 minutes, and we're going to use it throughout the movie.
Yeah, I can imagine him not even directing him, just saying do a bunch of reactions.
Oh, but then here's the thing: the pickups, all the reshoots and the pickups happened several months later, and they were all shot in the director's house.
Right.
And it makes perfect sense when suddenly you look you're clearly in a restaurant, and then you look back and the cutting reaction looks like in someone's house with a painting and a doorway that looks like you're in an office.
So the geography is so confusing. It's like, where is that guy? That guy's not here. He's not even in this room.
He's in another plane somewhere, and we don't know what's happening.
Popular pie plant pictured here.
Okay, Joe, keep it up.
Oh, it's up and ready. You just keep it warm.
It's warm and ready.
Okay, now can I just say two things about that?
That is horrible.
That's gross. But okay, first, Joe is a total womanizer.
Yeah.
1,000%. In fact, throughout the entire movie, he's hitting on other women. But it's not just Joe. Peggy.
Yeah.
Peggy's such a hoe. Such an obvious hoe. He hits on every man. There must be several clips of Peggy just literally hitting on every man in the room.
Yeah, she is horrible. She says stuff like this.
Hey, preacher.
Yeah?
You and I got nothing to do. Let's fuck.
Shut up. And he just goes, shut up.
Shut up, you hoe. You're always banging everybody.
Right. It's horrible. The people are horrible. Especially, I mean, it's mainly just those two, isn't it? Peggy and Joe.
Yeah, but then you also have, like, the doctor, and you have a few other people in between, but Peggy and Joe are the worst.
In terms of the larger characters, because there are minor characters, like, the nurse is horrible and flirty, but it's like porn dialogue, that is, but anyway. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, it's the whole thing, it almost feels like porn with the amount of sex scenes that are involved in this movie.
Yeah.
There's a lot of sex scenes that feel really forced in, I'd argue. Ugh,
yeah, and they're just like this. It's just the worst music ever as well.
It's so softcore porn, isn't it? The whole thing feels like softcore porn. Here's a bit. Okay, so let's go through bit by bit. And is this from the first sex scene?
It is. This is sex music one.
Sex music number one, people. There are about 5 sex scenes in this movie. The movie's only like an hour and a half, and there's 5 sex scenes in it.
And they are really cringy, because you can obviously tell, like, the director's just perving on it. Like, it's like, oh, yeah, yeah. Because the thing is, if it was porn, you know that the actors know what it's about, having sex, and it's kind of like they're all... But you don't... Basically, the in actors in a normal movie, you don't know how sexy it's going to get, because it's not meant to be a porno movie.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's obvious the director just going, oh, yeah, do this, do that. Oh, I'm going to have a close-up on your tits for ages. And I
stroke it, kiss it, kiss
it. It's horrible. It's really pervy.
Yeah, it's so weird. So there's a build-up to this sex scene, and I want to talk about, first of all, let's go right into the plot itself and go right into the very first scene.
Yeah.
So you've got the very, very first sequence, right? We're going to talk about the very first sequence where we're first introduced to our hero cops, right? So we're introduced to our hero cops. We're introduced to Frank and Joe. He comes out in a wig and a funny hat. And they're chasing him down with Peggy on helicopter.
Yeah.
Now, Peggy on helicopter's brilliant. It clearly shows that they didn't have the budget to properly keep Peggy in a helicopter.
No.
Because all the close-ups are clearly of her on a landed helicopter, not moving.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Reacting to stuff like she's above the ground. And it's so funny because he's like just moving ahead a bit, going like, I think it's happening over there, buddy. It's so funny. And so there they are in the helicopter, and they're chasing down these drug lords and that kind of thing, and starting on, which eventually leads to like a big chase. And the chase isn't too bad. There's worse car chases out there.
It's got music like this. Is the drug bust music.
It's so good.
Similar to the opening theme, actually.
I'm getting the vibe that the music was also half-assed as well. Yeah. Just like the rest of the goddamn movie.
They're basically just like he's heard about this whole cocaine bust going on, hasn't he, Joe?
Yeah.
And the thing is, he's just like transferred here, hasn't he? And he's like, he just seems to know exactly everything that's going on in this town all of a sudden.
Everything, like, right? He seems to already be shoved into it, not knowing that we didn't know properly that he's a transfer one. Although he kind of does, because at the very beginning, the scene before that, we're introduced to the Yakuza gang, the Katana gang.
Yeah.
And they already mentioned that they already brought a superhero cop. And then suddenly we're right into it, him doing a drug bust for something that has absolutely nothing to do with the Yakuza?
Yeah.
And that, to me, just screams, okay, we need an action sequence right now.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're doing the drug scene. It's very ham-fisted with the whole, like, transfer the suitcase from one boat to the other and all that kind of shit and everything else. And just them just mocking each other and making phone calls and shit until the car chase happens, which is... Okay. What do you think of the car chase?
I don't know. It was like, it was very, very sort of like badly edited, and it was just. I haven't really got an opinion on it because it was so shit.
No, but the thing is, I actually found it genius because some of the times the footage was sped up and you can clearly see.
Oh, definitely, yeah. That's the old, really old-fashioned technique that shouldn't be used anymore.
It's very Benny Hill.
Yeah.
There's also a moment where Frank Washington is trying to shoot from outside the car. And you can tell the car wasn't moving for his shots because the clouds aren't moving.
Oh, yeah.
The clouds just there, just hovering above him. And you can think, like, if you're driving fast, you would see, like, loads of things going past his head, but it doesn't.
Did you remember in that sequence as well that Joe is just constantly shouting?
Shoot! Shoot him!
Shoot him, damn it! Yeah, you got the son of a bitch, right?
I just love the really basic dialogue that's put in there sometimes, like, shoot, and it's repeated so many times. It's like, it's not, you know, there's no mixing up of the, like, certain things. He's just like, shoot, shoot.
It's so good. But then, due to, like, his fancy shooting and hitting the car just right after going through, like, a bit of a long chase, he hits it, and then the van explodes.
Causing a guy to be on fire.
On fire.
And it's like they try and...
Burning!
Oh my gosh, he's burning! He's burning!
Do something! Man, he's burning!
So I mean, again, this is like repeating the same line over and over.
He's on fire, man! He's on fire! Okay. And the funny thing about that is, it's clearly a completely different person on fire, covered in fireproof gel, to the point that by the end of this thing where clearly the actors were supposed to be doing this faster to take him out.
I know, it looks like he's actually on fire by the end of it.
By the end of it, it's like saying, for God's sake, I nearly fucking burned my face off. What is wrong with you? Like I mentioned, now we're suddenly then introduced to the Katana Gang.
Yes.
With Robert Zadar. I think Robert Zadar totally owns this movie. And not only does he totally own this movie, he has, I think, one of my favourite sequences in the whole movie. So at this point, the burn victim is now being taken away for questioning. All right, so he's taken away for questioning. But clearly, he has been on fire and lost the ability to speak because his lips are burnt off. Mm. Right?
Before we get to that bit, I have got a clip of... Because the boss gives an order to Robert Zadar's character to go and kill this guy.
Exactly.
And, well, first you get a little bit of an introduction of him, which is...
So they call him Samurai, huh?
Yes.
Another guy they call Samurai.
Yeah. His real name is Joe Marshall.
Yeah.
They call him Samurai. He speaks fluent Japanese.
This is the
backstory. He got his martial arts training from the Masters in Japan.
Masters of Japan.
He was brought over here from the police force in San Diego to fight us.
To fight us? To fight me? To destroy my operation? To kill you and my other men? To put handcuffs on me? And put me in the gas chamber?
Jesus.
But this is that's before he gives the order to go and get the other guy.
Yeah.
And, like, he just keeps
giving... Samurai. If he's a samurai, what the hell are you?
I'll get to know him. And then we'll see who the real samurai is.
So you know where our man is?
Yes, boss. I know the hospital and the room. And he's burned bad. Real bad.
Real bad.
He won't be able to talk.
I want him dead. I want his head cut off and brought here. I want his head on this piano so that every man in my organization understands once more that no katana gets captured alive or talks.
That's going to ruin the piano.
Head on the piano. I love that line.
That's going to ruin the piano.
But the reason why I played that bit, it's kind of a confusing sort of section because he's talking about, he's got that exposition dump of Joe, telling who Joe is, but then he's talking about getting the guy in the hospital straight away immediately.
Yeah.
But like he's talking, but still talking about Joe. Like,
it's so confusing.
You know where our guy is. Like, oh, I was thinking Joe, and no, he doesn't mean Joe at that point. He means the guy in the hospital.
It also
but it's so blended together, isn't it? Like,
it also kind of means as well, like the director, in that speech alone, it clearly shows that the director didn't really have like any idea of what a samurai really does or what it is. Because he's talking about the masters in Japan. And he's talking about, he's very vague with why Joe Marshall is somehow suddenly the samurai cop.
Yeah.
Other than he speaks fluent Japanese, which we never see in the movie, and anything else.
Mm.
You know, so this
you almost needed like the director to be Japanese and to know understand the culture a little bit to like But no.
Look, but this, you have, first of all, you've got an Iranian man who barely doesn't seem to understand the concept of what America is.
Doesn't know anything that he's talking about.
Let alone try to have him understand a Yakuza. It's a totally different kettle of fish.
The Katana Gang.
So now Robert Azar has his orders. And then he's now going to go to the hospital. That hospital where our burn victim is going to be. Yeah. So he has been put on watch. He's got coppers coming around to keep an eye on them and so on and so forth. And they're just about ready to, like, you know, just keep an eye on him.
I know which bit you're going to talk about.
Yeah. So when this happens, okay, first of all, you've got a security guard who just seems to be randomly distracted by wanting to constantly hit on the receptionist, by the way.
Yeah, like, he's the worst actor. He's like, okay, I'll just stay here then, that kind of thing.
And then this redhead bombshell. Now, she's hot. Now, she's hot, I'm going to admit, right? She's hot. She comes in what clearly seems to be, like, laundry or some kind of, like, bed linens or something. Like, she's pushing around a laundry basket.
Yeah, it's a massive cart, like really huge.
Yeah,
you continue.
Yeah, and so she's pushing this kind of laundry basket, and obviously the security guard goes over and says, like, "Hey, what are you doing?" And she says, "I'm here to change the linens. What's wrong with that?"
No, she says, "I'm here to change the trash,"
which is even weirder because so you're holding a linen basket.
She's got a big bin.
Just a big bin. So stupid. Right? So the guy goes, okay, but be quick, right? Goes in. And this is the moment where I fell in love with Robert Zadar, because multiple layers is about to occur. So she just, this red bombshell moves this bin, linen basket, whatever it is, into the room, closes the door, removes a blanket, and reveals that Robert Zadar, a huge man, by the way,
was in the bin.
Dressed as a doctor, by the way. Which is more questions. Holding a katana and dressed as a doctor, comes out of the linen basket. And you can see he's even struggling to step out. He's like getting a bit, oh, wait a minute.
How did he fit in there? It is crazy.
It took him a while to get out of it, so it took him, must have been forever to get him in there. Must have been properly, like, wrapped. So he gets out and then just grabs the guy's head, the bird victim's head, and just slices off his head.
Yeah.
With no screaming.
And there's a really, like, sort of, there's a process after that. It's like, he cuts the throat.
Yeah.
And then he hands the katana to the bombshell.
Yeah.
She wipes off the blood. And yeah, it's all very, like, clinical, isn't it? Like,
it's very, you think, like, the first time you're going to have a proper katana death, you thought it'd be, like, gruesome. And it is kind of gruesome, but it's very, like, a doctor would be.
And I guess they're doing it that way because it's like stealth, isn't it? It's like they're sneaky.
It's being sneaky, being quiet. Right, so sneaky,
getting in bins.
And it's a funny thing, right? So the sword gets wiped, okay? The head goes into a separate bin, covered with a blanket, and then Robert Zadar goes back into the linen basket.
Get back in the bin.
And then gets dragged out.
Yeah.
And then, literally like a second or so later, the copper finds the head. Finds a headless body.
They sneak out with this music.
It's so perfectly cheesy. It's so cheap as well. So just as he's been sneaking about, right, the security guard finally notices.
Yeah, and there's another repeating of lines in that section. Because, like, you get some guy doing this.
Hey, wait a minute. I want to talk to you. Ah! Oh!
Right.
Hey, wait a minute.
It's almost like the same. I'm sure it's the same line repeated. It's not like said again. Like,
I have a fact.
Okay, so
the movie was done wild, which means it was recorded originally with absolutely no sound whatsoever. So it was not recorded with sound on set at all, right? some of the bigger actors were able to come in, but all the side characters, all the smaller parts, other than a couple of people, really, a lot of the bit actors didn't come back, obviously. So the director did it. Every single one.
Right.
Which is why all the thugs all sound the same. And it's also the reason why it sounds very heavily robotic, because the guy didn't actually know how to do ADR properly in the first place. So a lot of the dialogue sounds very tinny and woody because he didn't record it in a booth. They did it in his bloody bathroom.
Yeah, there's some of my favourite, like, dialogue bits are from those extras, though. Do you remember, like, there's that bit where there's, like, Joe and this extra guy in like a dark room or something?
Yes, the editor.
And this guy talks like this.
Who could shoot this in a mafia boss's house?
One of his own men.
And then they got this.
Are you expecting anybody?
No.
Okay, that's
a warning bell.
Okay, that, oddly enough, that was done by the actor who played Frank Washington. He was just forced to say, like, just do the lines for this guy. Okay. Now, let me explain. Frank Washington, Mark Fraser, is a black guy. This editor guy is an old white guy. It sounds so weird having that voice coming out of this. And again, that scene was a reshoot that made no sense, because I don't know why the hell he was in a red room for no fucking reason.
Well, that's why it seemed it was a dark room. I think it was just a bad stock again. It was like bright, like reddy orange, that room was.
I don't understand why he was even there in the first place. What was he looking out for? There was no photos anywhere.
You expecting anyone? I'm the honey monster.
Cookie.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, so a lot of people, including like Matt and Zadar and everyone else, were starting to get a little frustrated about the dialogue in the movie, right?
And
Of course he was, right? And he was starting to get more frustrated of the lack of multiple things, because the majority of this movie were all shot on single takes.
Mm.
Okay, so someone recorded the lines, he filmed it, and then that was it.
Yeah.
Right? There was no extra takes for most of them. So Matt admitted that intentionally he would sometimes try to ruin takes so he can actually get a second better take. But the director
kept it in. And also, there's some great scenes where the actors are expecting him to cut and he doesn't cut, and so they keep going, but it's awkward because they don't really know what to do after that point where they're supposed to stop, but he doesn't say cut.
Okay, I think I know which scene you're talking about. So it's actually after all this, so the head's been chopped off and put away, Robert Zadar's beat up a couple of people and half the cops and everything else, and there's a bit of a battle between the coppers and everyone else, right?
Yes.
Then they meet the police chief.
Yeah, he is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's this.
Everything you did was wrong. You're the one that talked me into bringing this moron from San Diego to fight the Japanese Katana gang. You know what the results are? A man in our custody lost his head. An officer lost his hand. And there are three police officers in the hospital right now. God damn you guys. All you've done is cost me bloodshed and mayhem.
Mayhem.
Me, misery, my future. This man has been here 1 week and I almost lost my job. If he's here one more week, I might well end up in jail and die of a heart attack, and I don't like that.
Hey, I've been here 1 week.
And just how long will it take you to bring him to their knees? 1 week? 1 month? Next year? At what cost and how many lives?
I love it.
At what cost and how many lives?
At the end of this sequence, it's kind of brilliant. He says one of my favorite lines in the movie.
And because of you, I'm about to be fired. I'm going to lose my pension. That means my future's gone. But you know something? I don't give a fuck.
He doesn't.
There's only one thing in this world I want. I want you to find that motherfucking Japanese gangster. I want you to kill him, and I want you to kill every one of his men. I want you to turn his house into a bloodbath.
Yeah!
Don't leave anybody alive.
Fantastic! That is one of them.
And all three of us will turn our badges in.
And let's say goodbye to Jay's reaction.
We'll beat up this police force for good.
Now you're talking.
That isn't the bit you mentioned, but that is another golden bit by the captain.
The captain is great, because the captain only appears in probably like 3 sequences in the whole movie. He's not in it a lot. But when he is, it's golden. In the first sequence, first time we meet him, he's doing that first part, right? And this is the bit where he's saying, like, some people seem to have no idea what they're supposed to do in that take, right? So at one point, this is so weird. He's lying into his chair. He's looking like fed up and tired. Just like, get out of here, boys. You're doing the worst thing ever. And he says the best line in the movie for me.
I feel like somebody stuck a big club up my ass, and it hurts. I've got to figure out a way to get it out of there.
And then for no reason, Frank Washington just kisses him on the forehead. And then him and Joe just go, hee-hee-hee, and run out.
Yeah, it seems like Frank and Joe, or the actors themselves, in that bit, are just prattling about, trying to ruin the take, like you mentioned.
Yes.
And yet it doesn't cut, and then the captain is pointing, waiting for the cut. There's no cut, so he just gets back in his chair and smiles.
And like, that's the weird thing, that because he kept that, it changes the dynamic completely. It's no longer like police chief is pissed off at them.
Because he's gone from being very, very angry to, you
rebels, look at you, you lovable rogues.
But it is absolutely amazing, it is so funny.
Are you Fujiyama?
Yes, I am. Who are you?
I'm a cop.
Stings.
In that case, you'll talk to me. I am Mr. Fujiyama's attorney.
What do you want?
How did Fujiyama have
it? You're the infamous boss of this shit katana gang, huh?
Shit gang.
He
does it again! It's amazing. But then, obviously, that leads on to a really great monologue.
It's the best speech. It's so good. He's so passionate. And the lines are so balmy.
Now, I'm telling these son of a bitches that we respect the Japanese of this country who are honest businessmen.
Honest.
And yeah, this is the land of opportunity for legitimate business.
Legitimate.
Not for death merchants who distribute drugs to our children through schools and on the streets.
Fuck children, wow.
Now, I'm telling these motherfuckers
that if they
continue killing our children to make their precious millions that they deposit in their secret Swiss bank accounts.
What?
Counselor, before your lawsuit even gets off the court clerk's desk, I'll have their stinking bodies in garbage bags and ship them back to Japan for fertilizer. Got it? And you too.
All right, so...
That is amazing. That is like, he doesn't really know anything about crime of what he's seen in movies.
Yeah.
And he just kind of like throws it in there. Like, so generalizing about criminals, isn't it?
It's general crime. And he said like, you and your shit. And I don't like it. And I love it. We are then suddenly then introduced to Jennifer.
Yes.
Now, Jennifer is the owner of the restaurant with the gay waiter in it.
Yeah. And Joe, at one point, when he meets her, he says, like, what are you doing with a geek like this?
I know! What a racist thing to say, because he's supposed to be hanging out with Fujiyama. And you're thinking, like, oh my god, are you just saying, like, what? He actually doesn't say, what is a nice American girl doing with a geek like this? And you're thinking, you racist. Fujiyama might be amazing in bed.
There's
you have no idea.
There's plenty of racism in this film.
Huge. Oh, yeah. There's loads of really bizarre black jokes.
Yeah, I like this.
Who's going to answer to Captain Roma on this?
You.
Shit, man. You burned my ass. You don't have to worry about that. It's already, I know. It's already black, huh?
Oh, my God!
Yeah, I know, it's already black.
He's by this point, he's so used to it. Like, as the character, he's like, everyone doing the black joke, let me just keep the black jokes, I'll get it. This is, you're not the first one to say my ass is black.
It's amazing.
So yeah, there's a lot of racism in this, but not like terrible racism. It's like that kind of weird, bizarre, subtle racism, or making a racist joke every so often that makes it weird.
Yeah, and it's kind of like I was going to say it's kind of the time, but it's more like 70s humor than 90s.
I think it's more him. Yeah. I think it's just mostly the director who likes his very immature humor.
Yeah.
By this point, then, afterwards, they end up going to meet up Okamura, and they're going to go and invade his home.
Yeah.
And this is where we get Okamura's sex scene, which is very forced and awkward.
It's amazing. That's like what I was saying earlier. It's like, you're gonna satisfy me?
Yeah. And you think, like, dude, no, please. It's not because he's unattractive or anything. It's mostly because the way he's presented... There he is in his tiny black, like tiny, tiny briefs.
Yeah, hairy chest.
Hairy chest, tiny briefs. Like the worst possible combination of things.
The director just loves people in underwear. Really,
he really does, because it happened several times, right? So he goes there.
Yeah, they burst in, and Joe says this.
Is that him?
I guess so. Looks like this is his last fuck.
Basically, never interrupt a sex scene. Just ever. And the funny thing is, he doesn't interrupt it properly. Because you think, like, in a cool, badass way, he, like, kicked down the door or kicked out or kicked through the window or something. But you see him and he just goes, like, freeze! And he's just struggling to open the door. So he's like, oh, God damn it. Like, who locks this thing?
Oh, it is amazing. There's too many funny bits to talk about. It's like, they're frequent, aren't they?
And then, finally, after quite a long time in the movie, we finally get some kung fu action. We get some actual karate,
yeah.
Which is kind of partly the point of the samurai cop, because he knows martial arts, he speaks Japanese, you know, he knows about the Yakuza, it's about time we have him do some martial arts.
Mm.
Obviously, it's going to be difficult to show a clip. I wish I was able to show this clip, because you can clearly see the reshoots occur in this fight scene.
Yes.
Because I feel as if in the original shoot, the fight was a lot shorter. Yeah. Mm. Because he wanted to feel like the fight was going to be just quick and simple, like the samurai cop Joe Marshall was able to dominate. He was dominant. And even though he was like put on like in a full Nelson and stuff like that, he is easily can take this guy down to show him like he is a super cop.
Yeah.
But then clearly there wasn't enough footage in this movie. So they reshot the entire fight scene.
Yeah. So there's lots of cut-ins, isn't there? Like, where close-ups, and he got the wig on, like I was saying earlier with it. He's just, he's back and forth, wig, no wig, no wig, wig, no wig, wig.
There's a moment in it where you can clearly see, like, the wig's about nearly fallen off, and he's... He's slipping down his face like this, and you can see Okamura just trying to put it back on. Yeah. It's like, oh, shit, oh, shit. But here's the thing. That fight scene was shot in a completely different place than it was in the original part of the movie, which makes sense to me because they're in this sort of green, sort of sandy part, which I'm not sure if it's supposed to be next to the beach or the fact that it's just his garden or something or whatever, right?
Yeah, you can't make any sense of the geography in this movie.
And then suddenly, once the wig appears, he's like in a desert, in a totally different place. Where is he? What happened?
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's
and like, then suddenly, they're back in the garden.
Yeah, back and forth with the cuts.
Back and forth. They're back in the garden. They have Okamura. They fight. He's about to arrest Okamura. But then Okamura gets out of this handcuff for some fucking reason and then gets shot.
Mm.
Right? He gets shot. So now he's dead. Which means it's war. It's on now. Oh, shit. His second command's dead? Fuck.
Yeah.
And so we need now to take down not just Joe, but everyone he's associated with.
Kill them
with.
All.
Fuck, some of it, some of these torture sequences, the next three sequences after it is just basically all the gang trying to find anyone associated with Joe to find his address.
Kill him. My pleasure.
My pleasure. So, basically, Robert Zadar's character is a fucking sadist. He is a fucking maniac.
Yeah, oh, God, when he bursts into the guy, earlier on we were saying, like, the guy where she goes, we've got nothing to do, let's
Preacher.
Fuck. Preacher.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he goes to Preacher's house
mm-hmm.
and just terrorises him and his wife. And it's just, like, horrible.
Tell me where he is or I'll hack her throat out piece by piece.
I swear, I don't know where he lives.
Who knows?
Well, please don't do anything foolish. How about Frank or Peggy, the girl cop?
You lie.
They're
you
pretty lie. Good friends. Maybe they know where he lives. Oh, please don't hurt my wife. Damn you!
At this point, his wife, he just slit his throat, slit her throat.
It's actually a really just horrible sequence. It's like scary. Like,
it's kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because at one point, because this is Robert Zadar. Robert Zadar's holding her, like she, her breasts are out as well. So
yeah.
It makes it even more awkward. And then literally, just as, by the sign of things, he's literally telling him all that he knows.
Yeah.
Because he, look, Preacher is just a workmate. He's not his best bud. No. Joe just been here for a week.
And this is why I think Robert Zadar's great and a great villain, because he is so nasty and he's convincing as a nasty guy.
Yeah.
And that whole, the scenes where he's like interrogating people and like torturing them and stuff is horrible. It's nasty. He's a nasty bastard.
The worst one is when he interrogates Peggy.
Yes. Yeah.
It is gruesome.
With the frying pan.
Oh my God, why?
So she's like literally just bent over backwards and she's got a top on that's like got a stomach exposed.
Yeah, yeah.
And like she was cooking on the hob and like frying up something. So he just keeps now and again pouring hot oil on her chest.
It is horrendous. Obviously we don't see it, but we see the action, not the actual results. Thank God.
Yeah.
But fuck, that is a step too far. Like, I'm not saying, like, yeah, but this is really showing that Robert Zadar is a bastard.
And going back to Preacher,
yeah.
When he's pleading after, when he's sort of, like, sobbing over his wife, he sounds like this.
Sally!
And that's Robert Zadar laughing like an idiot.
Sally!
That is Preacher acting. He sucks off there.
Wow. This is his moment.
Sally, help me.
This is his moment. Because he doesn't have a moment in this movie. He's getting a moment. This is his moment.
That's his Oscar moment.
This is pure gold. Robert Zadar has finally tortured all these people, right? Frank Washington seemed to have gotten away because he just had fucking goons.
Yeah.
He's just got beaten up. So he calls Joe Marshall, who at this time is having a date. He's having a date with Jennifer.
Yes.
After spending half the time in his office with a weird lion's head.
Mm.
And then convinces her to meet her after church. And he's very well dressed. Like, he's in a full suit and looking good with his ponytail and looking suave, right? He's looking suave.
Oh, well, this is the bit where she basically says, how did you know I'd come to your house with you? And he goes,
yes.
Let's just say I can read eyes.
What does that even mean? What does that even mean?
I can read eyes.
I can read that you are thirsty. That what it says to me.
To me, the reason why I saved that clip is because I thought it was like something a serial killer would say.
It's really creepy.
Like I can read your eyes because I want to keep them. Do you get the impression, you know, in this movie when lots of like crazy shit's happening and like, but it seems like he's just prattling about and trying to get with girls and stuff like that when he should be actually doing police work.
I'm not joking. Yeah. It's half the time his mind's on, I need to bang a chick. All right.
It's awful. Really, really bad. I think the director has seen like, maybe he's a fan of like James Bond or something. But the thing is, James Bond is more balanced because, he does sleep with a lot of women, but he also does a lot of like other cool stuff. But there's too much of the sex stuff and him trying to flirt with people in this movie.
And less police work.
Yeah.
So basically, should we have a moment of him actually doing some detective work rather than him just trying to bag all the ladies? Oh, but again, bringing the porn music in. And then once after the swimming sequence happens, you have Jennifer and Joe. They actually have sex. They finally bang. But after, like, a birthday cake, because apparently it's her birthday as well. What an awkward day. What a bad way to spend a birthday. Like, you would want to spend it with friends, family.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
So awkward.
Happy birthday, dear Jennifer.
Jennifer.
Happy birthday,
to you.
To you.
You got everything.
Well, you can't have a birthday without a cake.
The visual of that scene is amazing because he comes in with a full, like, chocolatey cake.
Yes.
In Speedo.
Showing off his abs. Showing off his abs. And her as well, like in a bikini, isn't she? So they're both in bikinis. He comes in with a giant chocolate cake, saying this half-assed version of happy birthday. And then literally just before you even get a chance to even taste the cake, just grabs her, puts her over the threshold, and then they just start banging.
Yeah, and this is a really cringy, like, long sex scene where you see him removing all of her clothes and stuff. And, and it's like, normally, when I was a teenager, like, sex scenes in movies like that, I'd be like, oh, yeah, it's great. But, like, as I've got older, I understand, like, filmmaking and stuff like that. I just see it as, like, a pervy director now. And, if it's a porn film, it's okay, like I said earlier, because it's the porn actors know what they're in for.
Yeah. There's always a sex scene. But I always think it's more tolerable if it's just one.
Yes, yeah.
Not five.
Then it gets into softcore porn territory, doesn't it?
It's pretty close to softcore porn. I'm very convinced, like, if the director had his way, it would be more like softcore porn. So by that point, like, fuck, he gets out of the house, there's people on the way, he shoots loads of people down, he's getting things sorted, right? And then he's about to go and say, fuck, I'm just going to go and find this guy. He's going to go and find Fujiyama and take him down, finally. So he goes to Fujiyama's place and start literally a hilarious, an absolutely hilarious gunfight occurs.
Mm.
There's a big, chunkier black guy who gets shot.
Oh, with a shotgun?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The guy with a shotgun. One, the guy doesn't know how to aim. That's one. Two, when he does get shot, he gets shot in one place, but he's holding somewhere else like he's in pain.
Yeah.
So he's elongating his death because he has no idea where he got shot. So he got shot, I think, in the stomach, but he's holding his upper chest like he's got shot in the chest. And it's like, and he's falling over a bit. And he's like, he's looking around. He looks at his stomach, and goes, oh, now I'm here. And just falls over.
It's great there. The gun fights in the movie are great because, like, the bad guys,
yeah,
they're never like fighting properly, like they're never like hiding behind cover properly, they're out in the open a lot. Mm. And there's bits where, like, when the redhead gets shot, she's just out in the open reloading, waiting to get shot. Like, she's not hiding.
It's fucking brilliant.
It's ridiculous. They just don't, the bad guys just don't know. You think being criminals, they'd know how to be in a gunfight.
Frank is actually really good with a gun. Frank is the only character in this movie, I'm generally convinced, who knows how to use a gun.
Yes.
And everyone else is like, point shoot? Is that how I use gun? Point shoot. Right? So, at that point, Fujiyama shows up and actually kidnaps Jennifer at one point. Like, he's holding her hostage a little bit. Like, he's about to put a gun.
Yeah, into... it's Joe's weakness now.
Joe's weakness because, he's found a girl that he actually likes. not just to bang, because according to this movie, he bangs a lot of women, but he actually spent a date with this one. He put effort. He put on a suit.
He apparently killed a chicken.
Yeah,
remember that bit? He goes, "Yeah, I went. My neighbor, she's got chickens, you know. So I jumped over the fence and I grabbed a chicken and I killed it myself because, you know, I wanted to impress you. See, I don't need the soundboard. I'm just giving the whole thing."
You quoted that note for note. Yeah. Basically, yeah. We realize he's probably a sociopath as well. So yeah. So Fujiyama's got Jennifer, and Frank's got a gun in, Joe's got a gun in, and this is actually a really cool sequence. I actually am quite impressed with the sequence.
Yeah.
Even in the shoddiness that is this movie, this scene's quite impressive. So, you know, Joe says, drop the gun. Joe drops the gun, right? And tells Frank, drop the gun, Frank. He drops the gun. And I love that Fujiyama went, ha, 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 why are you Americans so stupid? Basically. And he says, he's about to shoot, so he shoots Frank in the shoulder.
Yeah.
And he's about to shoot Joe. And then Frank, like a badass, just sweeps the gun he's dropped because he's just hit on the shoulder. And then shoots Fujiyama several times. It's like, that is awesome.
Yeah.
Well done, Frank.
Yeah,
the only
awesome
cool thing in the movie.
Although, I do like the next fight.
The final fight, yeah.
Yes.
Joe finally saves Jennifer. And you think at this point, the movie's over.
Yeah, well, you don't think it's over because you know Zadar's got to get it, don't you?
Yeah, you got to know he's got to get it. But you're also thinking, like, well, Jennifer's safe now, so what else are you going to do? Right, you know, you kind of wish that maybe that fight was right at the very, very end of the movie, which would make more sense.
Yeah.
You know?
It's weird because the main boss isn't the main bad guy in this movie. And that doesn't happen. That happens sometimes in films, but usually the lead henchman isn't the main guy. But I suppose because it's Robert Zadar, he has to be the main villain.
He's going to have to.
Even though he's the main henchman, really.
I mean, yeah, it's true, actually. He's because Robert Zadar is more noticeable, he's a bigger, chunkier guy. He's well known. Mm. He's actually the big bad. He is the big bad because Fujiyama does fuck all in this movie compared to Robert Zadar, who does fucking torture and sword fighting and everything else.
He's amazing. Now, Fujiyama is just, like, focusing on his Swiss bank accounts.
Exactamundo. After he guns down, like, everybody, the redhead and the guy with a shotgun and everyone else who can't aim to save their lives, finally, who's left is fucking Yamashita, a.k.a. Robert Zadar.
Yeah.
Right. Very random fact I have for you, which is one of my favourite things in the movie, just to sort of influence that even the director himself is unafraid and unafraid to sort of be a bit meta.
Mm.
Okay. That when Robert Zadar turns up before the final battle, he's in a car, right?
Yeah.
Do you know what the kind of car it was?
No.
A Suzuki Samurai. Thank you!
Great.
Like, he purposely just said, like, okay, we need something else here. Just put that in. See, that was clever, but it's fucking brilliant. So, they finally have this fight. And so, finally, the whole movie, we've been waiting for these two to fight.
Yeah, and they were sort of fighting with guns at first, but then, obviously, Zadar, I'm going to call him Zadar because you know who it is then. And it's like he at one point challenges him, doesn't he? It's like that's where the teaser clip came in at the beginning. It's like this. Like,
yeah.
So they call you Samurai.
Yeah.
Let's see how good you are with the sword. Samurai Super Cop.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of thing. But that clip isn't from this. But, you know, you get that that challenge with the sword then.
Yeah, so it's like if you and I are going to battle. It's not like you and I are just going to have a fight. No, we're going to battle. We're going to do it in the way of the samurai. And this is, again, the only other time, really, other than the karate fight, that we're finally going to see him do some samurai shit.
Yeah.
In a movie called Samurai Cop.
Yeah, it is weird because, like, there are situations where there's a lot of repeating in this, isn't it? That's why I played that clip for a different situation, because it's the same sort of thing. You get, like, a guy who's, like, saying, let's see how good you are with the sword.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. So they have this fight with the sword. And one thing I have to say is that Joe Marshall is so intense in this fight. So basically, you know, that you can see as he's swinging the sword around, his head is so red. He's like a tomato. He's like a lobster. His hands are not, though. He's
I wondered whether it was like he was red, or whether it was just like a film stock problem or something. Whether he actually is not supposed to be that red. You know what
no,
I mean?
No, I'm actually convinced. I think it's actually a combination of he's so intense that he's, you know, he's pulsating his veins in his neck, which can make your head, your face really red. And also a combination of sunburn, I think. I think he's a little sunburned.
But whenever you see like a clip, like an image of Samurai Cop,
yeah,
online or whatever, like in a thumbnail for a review, mm, or like just a poster or something, often it's that red face, Joe with the, yeah, samurai sword, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. That is the most infamous image. Everywhere you see it, that's the face you see of Joe.
Yeah. Okay.
So, final fight happens. And it is hilariously epic. Sword fights going back and forth. Samurai katanas, Japanese swords are going ching and chang and fantastic. I'm so happy.
Same sound effect repeating over and over, like a ching ching or a punch and stuff.
Exactly. It's the same. It's such stock. But it's surprisingly good. Like, I'm not saying like it's the best sword fight I've ever seen, because fuck no, there's better. But it's actually one of the better choreographed fights.
Oh yeah, definitely. It had to be. It's a fast last fight, you know.
It's the last big epic fight. But then, you know, Zadar is beaten.
Yeah.
Quite profoundly, right? And then he goes and says like the bits where he's about to do the samurai thing.
You lost. You lost face.
Yeah, he lost.
That's
face.
Joe saying you've lost.
He's lost it. And so Zadar finally says he wants to go out in the most samurai way possible.
You know the code of the Bushido. Kill me.
So, yeah.
So then, like, Frank goes...
What is he doing?
No.
Leave him alone. He's a samurai.
Yeah, he is.
He wants to die with honor.
Okay, just before this, I love this, because at one point, Joe's, like, very tempted. Like, he's pissed off with him.
The music is building and building, like, into a crescendo. Like, Joe has got his sword high above, yeah, Rob Zadar.
Yeah.
About to strike. And Frank is just, no, Joe, you're a cop. Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot. I forgot this was my occupation. I've got to do this properly.
I'm so overwhelmed by the fact I'm a samurai, too.
He's never shown to be a real samurai in the entire movie.
But apparently he's supposed to be.
He's supposed to be. Apparently he understands samurai lore. So basically, by this point...
He knows what Japanese sword is.
Japanese sword. So sorry. So he's a... So basically, Robert Zadar does the... what is the name of that, actually? The name of the act where a man kills himself in honour. It's a Japanese name. I can't remember what it is.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but I can't remember.
Harakiri? I think somewhere along the lines of that.
It's almost like you're gutting yourself.
Yeah, so he gets a samurai sword and guts himself. Mm. So he dies in an honourable way. Right. And then by that point, that's pretty much where the movie ends by that point.
Yeah, it just like closes out with some music like this.
Some quite epic tunage, actually.
I really like this piece of music, actually.
It's kind of like old school. It's like very early 90s R&B.
It's a good, like, good bit of cool music at the end there to go over the credits.
So, now that we've done the whole movie, we've done all the best bits in the movie, we've covered everything. So now, we need to do...
Trashometer.
Thank you. So, the Trashometer, for those who are unaware, is how we rate these sort of trashy movies. So, we have 5 different settings. We have tame, which means it's boring. Tiny bit trashy, where it's trashy, but not trashy enough. Trash, which is the sweet spot, the perfect middle. Too trashy, where it's starting to get annoying, and then torture, which is we actually get angry at it.
Yes.
So, what did you think overall of Samurai Cop.
It's got to hit the sweet spot for me.
Yeah?
It's got to be, like, in the middle somewhere. It's got, because it is, it's not, I didn't find it tame at any point. I didn't find it a little bit trashy. I found it to be trashy, certainly yes. trashy.
100%.
But it was never too much. It was never torture for me. It was so, it possibly would go a bit, little bit over the middle part, the middle mark. Because it is now and again getting a bit too much.
But it's never too much enough.
No, it's never like, sense. It's never like really, really torturous.
I think it's never torturous. I think it's because of how you can clearly see that some of the guys were enjoying themselves.
Yeah.
In some way. You got Robert Zadar, who is like a legend in B movies.
Yeah.
You have bad acting from like several people, horrible jokes, but they're all done in the sort of like scratching your head moment, which makes you laugh. You have these sort of random scenes, sex scenes, humor, the wig. There's a lot there to enjoy.
Yeah, it's, but it's just, it's like accidentally brilliant. That's the thing. That's why it's enjoyable.
Why it's enjoyable is because it's accidental. And I think, again, this is the whole purpose of trying to find what is the ultimate trash film. The ultimate trashy film is a movie that is sincere in its delivery, but is also just a beautiful accident waiting to happen.
Definitely.
It's a big mess.
This is a perfect example of that. This is why so many people love this movie.
Yeah. And
it's
this just is...
It goes in the category of, like, Troll 2 and The Room, and this is why I picked it for this anniversary episode.
Yeah. It's we've got a longer list going, and I have to say, this is trash.
Definitely. It's got to be, like, what, so 55, 60,
I think this is about 60, 65%.
Yeah, definitely.
65% trash. Well done. Okay. So, we have now officially done Samurai Cop. We've been wanting to do Samurai Cop for a while. So, definitely. I was quite excited we finally did Samurai Cop. So, however, there's quite a few things we want to just mention at the end of the podcast. So at the moment in time, the time that we're recording, we're a few weeks away from doing the Miami Connection screening over at the Derby. We're doing it at the Quad Cinema.
Yeah.
I am stoked.
Yeah, we are so excited about this, and we're going to release some like Miami Connection content soon, like a Trashometer, a little video review, like a ranking the film, and you know we can release the pod. We'll release the podcast, I think, on YouTube after the screening.
Yeah. So if anyone's in the Derbyshire, Nottinghamshire area and wants to kind of join us in this live screening, it's happening on the 29th of February at about 8 PM. Go to the Quad in Derby and join us there. It's going to be a hell of a time.
So you'll see an intro by us.
Yeah.
And then just get to watch this glorious movie.
It is a trash film. It is in the sweet spot. I think we wouldn't really show any other kind of movie. We'd only want to watch movies that are purely in the trash spot.
Yes.
To demonstrate to people. We would never put you in anything that's really torturous.
Because the thing is, people have to pay to see these movies.
Yeah, you're giving
so
money.
You need to make them enjoy themselves if they're paying for it.
100%.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We're not sadists.
Yeah, I might be the inflictor of pain, but I'm not a bastard.
No.
Jesus. Thank you. If this is the first time you're hearing us, thank you very much for subscribing. If you want to follow along, remember we're now on all podcast platforms, so you can find us on Spotify, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, you can find us on Stitcher Radio, you can find us on Buzzsprout, everywhere you can find that. And also, we have a YouTube channel as well.
Yes.
So if you want to find any of our video content, because we do kind of have crossover moments, but we also have unique content over there, you can find us on YouTube under the Trash Tapes. So if you find in the Trash Tapes YouTube channel, you can find us there. But you're also connected to things like Enigmatic Productions, and we also have Enigmatic Play for all the video game stuff. So if you, whatever you like, we have a little bit of your fancy.
Yeah, you can always find, say you come across one of the channels, like you go to the main Enigmatic Productions channel, which is easier to find because it's been on there for longer.
Yeah.
If you go onto the channel of that, there are links, easily clickable icons to the other channels, like the Trash Tapes and Enigmatic Play, so you can find this quite easily.
Exactly. So go there, like, subscribe, share, and the whole shebang. Because we're not saying we're slowly trying to grow an empire, but it would be nice. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day, but I would like Rome.
Yeah. And if you, I mean, some people might not use podcast platforms, so if you wanted to just, you can listen to the episodes on the website. So if you just go to enigmaticproductions.co.uk /... the trash tapes with hyphens in between the words, then you can just listen to all the episodes on the website.
Every single one of them.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's our little plugins. So now, next month, I'm not going to tease too much, but next month, because there's a certain video game coming out around this time, we're going to do a video game movie. But actually, we're not doing one. We're doing two. We're not doing one, then we're doing two. So it's a double whammy. It's the first time ever we're doing a double feature, which I am terrified about. So get ready, people. Thank you very much for hearing. Keep an eye on your trash. There might be some treasure in there. See you guys later.
See you later, guys.
Hey marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Thank you for listening to this podcast episode and hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please share it around with movie lovers you know, maybe add a star rating or write a good review. All of this helps with the algorithm and provides us with more opportunities to reach the ears to a whole new bunch of bad film fanatics. Want to find out more about us? Then head over to our socials where we provide sneak peeks and up-to-date news on everything nostalgic and trashy. You can find our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages in the description. So please, follow us. See you next time, cinephiles.